You are listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients while having a great work-life balance. In addition to our premium courses on the Effective Statistician Academy, we also have lots of free resources for you across all kind of different topics within that academy. Head over to theeffectivestatistician.com and find the academy and much more for you to become an effective statistician. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the ever-growing video on demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Head over to the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today.
Hello, and welcome to The Effective Statistician. And today, I'm going to be in conversation with Alexander Schacht on his own podcast. How cool is that to be on your own podcast as a guest?
Yep, that's pretty cool. And thanks, Alan, for interviewing me on this topic that is very close to both our hearts.
And I believe the podcast is actually celebrating something at the moment.
Yeah, we have 450 episodes now published. It's pretty interesting when you start counting podcast episodes, what do you count as an episode and what you don't count as an episode. But anyway, 450 or plus minus some is a pretty big number, and I'm super happy about it. I'm especially also happy about all the people that have contributed to it, being as co-hosts, as guests, as producers, or many people that just recommended the podcast and listened to it and hopefully learned from it and implemented on these learnings.
And it's amazing, actually, when you talk to people, you mention the Effective Statistician podcast and how much people enjoy listening to the recordings, not just in the statistics world, by the way, as well. I get people in leadership and coaching that have listened to the podcast because I've recommended it to them. And they've just loved it. They just love the variability of topics.
Yeah. I think I always wanted to help people, not just only on the technical part, but on all the different aspects that help you to become an effective statistician. Nowadays, maybe called data scientist or any other quantitative scientist in medical research. And I think the lines are blurring quite a lot. When I started the podcast, it was just about discussions around estimands, and people were talking about using things like propensity scores in clinical trials. And that was really coming out of the most real-world evidence, the observational research space, which you could call maybe more data science space. And things are blurring now. You need to be knowledgeable about many different aspects as a quantitative researcher in that space from a stats perspective or from a methods perspective. And of course, you need to combine that with tools around personal effectiveness and tools that help you to become influential in your role, because being right is not good enough.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that I've emphasized a number of times is that the technical skills are important. So it's important to have that technical knowledge. But without the human skills to back it up, I don't like the word soft skills, by the way, but the human skills to back it up or to support it, then those technical skills don't go for anything. And I know you've had Casper Roofy back on a number of times. And Casper, whilst when we were at Roche, he led this initiative to write this paper on innovation, using the equation that innovation equals, I'm trying to think of the actual equations now, invention multiplied by commercialization. And that commercialization is the bit that really takes the invention piece to out to the real world.
Yeah, you can really look at it like a multiplication. Even the best invention cancels out in terms of impact if it's not used.
Yeah.
And that is not just within the statistics field. Yeah, you can have a look back into history and see how many inventions got lost or later reinvented by other people who were better in the commercialization part and then had a big success around it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that is one thing to really emphasize. I wanted to revisit some of the topics that we talked about before, maybe in a new light. And so I wanted to start with some of those human skills that we need. And I always start with leadership. And leadership to me encompasses so many different aspects. But I guess what I'm thinking of is, what does it mean to you?
So leadership for me means that you help others to accomplish something. Yeah. Leadership is, for lack of a better word, influencing in all kinds of different directions. Yeah. It can mean to people that report to you, and that is a very classical way of looking into leadership. And also means influencing people that are next to you. Yeah, peers that maybe are outside of your organization, maybe even outside of your company.
Yeah.
And definitely also managing upwards, yeah, or leading people that are above you. And I think there's one important aspect to it. For me, it's also really important that it's connected with a good value mindset. It's about helping the others so that they can also benefit from it. Yeah. Benefit from it in the short and in the long term. We see so much leadership in the world, yeah, that has a value set which I strongly disagree with, and that makes people that they are responsible for suffer. And also, you can also think about that as leadership in a way and say leadership is just a tool. Yeah. There's some argument that it also has this value attached to it. Michael Hyatt emphasizes this quite a lot, because otherwise you could list many dictators and in history as stellar leaders because they build these great empires, but for what kind of cost? Yeah.
And for the benefit of themselves more than anything else.
Yeah, and mostly for the benefit of themselves.
And I like the way you emphasize that it's not just about the leader, it's about the people they're leading. And that comes back to Stephen Covey's habits. One of them is to think win, because everything else is win-lose. Lose. Yeah, exactly. So win-lose will lead to lose. So yeah, that's a really important piece to think about. And I think that there are... These days, leaders are thinking more of being more purpose-driven. So you mentioned values, purpose-driven is another way of thinking about this, in that it's not just about a single bottom-line profit these days. It's more about, what are we doing for the good of all? What are we doing for the good of the environment or the good of the population as a whole? And I think that's where leaders should be moving more towards, and not just this bottom-line, whether you want to call it profit or whether you want to call it, like you mentioned, dictators building their empires. To me, it's more a case of, if you've got a value around others and supporting others, that's where this is being more purpose-driven.
And here it's also good leaders break that down into something that is much more actionable. Yeah, you can have a great value statement for your big companies that you're working on, but then that can feel quite detached to your day-to-day activities. Yeah. Let's say you have a meeting and people come together to this meeting. I see so many of these meetings happening without having a clear goal of it. What goal do we want to achieve, and how does that goal is associated with our longer-term vision that we have, our purpose? And here, of course, also very often the underlying values that we have. That goes actually also together with another of the seven habits of Stephen Covey, starting with the end in mind. Make sure everybody understands where you're heading towards. Yeah. Whether that is you have a one-to-one, if you have a team meeting, especially if you have a give a presentation at a conference or something like this. Yeah. Always frame things so people understand where are you heading to? Why are you thinking this way? And also, what's in it for me? Yeah.
Absolutely. And you can actually even boil that down to a clinical trial. You know, what's the a clear objective? What's the scientific question we're trying to answer with this clinical trial? How often do we see that? Do we see a clinical trial that has such a weak objective? And you mentioned Estermans earlier on. I think the Estermans framework has actually been brought us back to actually better defined objectives.
Yeah, and beyond the scientific objective or the scientific question, how will that help us make better decisions or help inform decisions of regulators, payers, patients, physicians? So always understand how a specific project like a clinical trial fits into the bigger picture. I've seen a case where this kind of scientific objective was passed on to the stats organization and was completely unrealistic. Yeah. It was some kind of wishful thinking from the marketing and from the market access areas. Unfortunately, instead of going back to these stakeholders and understanding why are they asking for such a high bar for the study, where is that coming from? Right. How it will help them? Yeah. The stats organization just accepted these, yeah, checked it and says, well, that's pretty much impossible because it would be a huge study. It would take forever. And the chances of this actually getting the outcomes that the other departments wish for was epsilon.
And that, yeah. And that brings me on to a topic. That's an interesting example because it brings me on to a topic of how would the stats function or the statistician or the quantitative function in this case influence the clinical department? What I hear a lot of is, I hear this from a lot of quantitative scientists, that we can't influence or we don't have the influence on the clinical, just go off and do what if they want to. We don't have the influence. So maybe we can talk a little bit about what does it take to be more influential?
So the first thing is you can't influence a department. You influence people.
That. Yeah?
Find out who are actually decision makers and who are people that are advocates for you, who are people that potentially are concerned about your ideas or maybe confused about your ideas. So first you need to identify the different people. That's really important. And here, sometimes other people in your network might help you. Yeah. Maybe it's your supervisor. Maybe it's your step supervisor. Maybe you have a mentor that can help you with that. Yeah. A friend in that department that you have. Yeah. That can help you with these kind of things. So the network plays here a big role. That's why I always advocate for having a strong network. Yeah. Which, by the way, stays even if there's a restructuring. Yeah. Networks are incredibly robust against kind of these constant changes in companies.
Absolutely. And I recorded an episode on the power of networking ahead of the PSI conference, because I completely agree with you. It's a powerful tool at conferences, but also within companies as well. And you don't need to deliberately go out and find, but you can stand by them in the coffee area and you'll talk to them. You'll find out who they are. Then you can be deliberate in actually approaching them. One of the things I find with quantitative science, and the reason that they may lack influence, is they try to be too technical. I emphasize, you said about finding the decision maker. Once you've found the decision maker, you've actually got to speak their language. You can't speak your language because the decision maker doesn't care about your language. They care about their language. So in terms of influencing, you have to understand what is going to help them, not necessarily what's going to help you.
Yeah, it's it's so famous, understand what it's for them, what it's in them. Yeah. So here, understand what are their goals, for example, what are their constraints. Here, basically, business acumen also helps quite a lot.
Yes.
Yeah. If you can understand, okay, this department has these kind of objectives, these struggles, works with that other department, maybe a not so optimal way. All these things come from business acumen. This will help you to understand where the other person is. And you need to understand that because you need to build trust. In our leadership program, we talk about trust being, and here's another equation, this is a product of care, character, and competence. And the other person wants to understand that you care for them. And that's where kind of understanding what's important for them comes into play.
And I think the care piece is quite an interesting one. I use the equation that John Blakey derived, which is similar. It's the product of ability, integrity, and benevolence. And that matches your three exactly. And the one that a lot of leaders forget is that benevolence piece.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is the easiest part to actually change.
Yeah.
Character and competence are pretty difficult. By the way, there's a really important second thought to that. It doesn't matter what you think you care, what your competence and your character is. Only things what the other person perceives about these things.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, completely agree. What you might think is good for them, you've got to find out what's good for them in the first place, which again comes back to Stephen Covey's 7 habits: seek first to understand, then be understood.
Yep. Another aspect that comes here into play is the whole branding. Yeah. When you think as an organization, you want to have a bigger influence, which basically means all the people in your organization as individuals have a bigger influence. You as an organization need to show that you care, that you have competence, and that you have character.
Yeah.
But there's one other really important aspect. You need to be known. Yeah. People do business with people they know and trust. Yeah. First, you need to be much more well known, and all the different people in the organization need to be more well known within the organization. I think especially statistics, data science department has a very big internal focus. Yeah. They focus on specific tasks, specific projects. The success of the overall department also depends a lot on how the department is perceived. And you might think, but that's unfair. Welcome to reality. That's just how it works.
Life is unfair. And yeah, it's one of those things we accept. But I think you make a really good point about getting more well-known within the organization can certainly help you become much more influential.
Yeah, yeah. One tool that I always recommend for that is a very easy thing, and that is training or education. Yeah. As statisticians, you can help others understand why, for example, the competition has a different design than you, how the requirements from regulators or payers, HDA bodies, how that translates into a design of experiments, into clinical trials, into using real-world evidence, or all kind of other sources.
Agreed. With the proviso that we just talked about earlier, get into their world and make sure it's a good thing for them. So again, you've got to understand what do they need? What do they need to know from that regulatory update or regulatory piece? What do they need to know that's going to make their life easier?
Yeah. That's why I'm honestly not a big fan of these statistics 101 courses. I've always felt like a more targeted approach, like statistics for diabetes, statistics for oncology, statistics for immunology, whatsoever, is much more easy for people to understand, because then you can take a specific example from their world, which directly helps them to understand that this is relevant to them. You can take a study that is currently very hot, could be your own study or a competitor study, and then speak about it, and you will directly have that attention. Then later on, the slides that explain what a p-value is can be the same, of course, across all the different areas. But starting with that specific example makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I completely agree. The Statistics 101, without the context, and the context, again, coming back into their world, the context in their world, it is not useful. It will go in one ear and go out the other. Most non-statisticians who come along to those courses, probably not going to use that stuff. Whereas if they, if you're, take infectious diseases, if you're coming along and talking about a platform trial for infectious diseases that's doing some dose finding, but a specific example, they can then take that away and use that information when they're communicating with their statistician inside a company.
Yeah, and of course you have all the time, you have opportunities to educate. Yeah, there's a competitor study published, and you explain why the results are that way and what led to maybe the results being looking better than your own compound, or maybe looking worse than your own compound. Whenever you plan on your own study, you can use that as to speak about estimates, about how you best select doses. There's so many kind of different aspects about it. And people really love to learn something. And this, if you can make people experience this aha moment, that helps so much.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a call really for statisticians within organizations, because I know from my example, from my own time within Roche, I remember being asked to do no end of trainings, education for the clinical groups. And it's a great way to get to be known within a company.
Yeah. Now, in order to be effective here, you need to understand a couple of things about communication, especially also about presentation skills. I always think about, if you become a really good presenter, you will become better in all other ways of communication as well, because it's the ultimate way of communicating. We have recorded several podcast episodes about presentations. Really invest in this area. It's so important. And don't copy what everybody else is doing. Because most presentations in the business context and also at conferences are just pretty poor.
They're poor. And one of the things I notice with, particularly in the quantitative sciences area, we put formulae there. And I remember it's quite a number of years ago when I was at GSK, talking to James Roger, and James Roger said, what that is trying to do is impress people so they believe that you're intelligent.
Yep.
No. So my recommendation on that is to don't. Nobody's going to follow a formula. I say nobody. Most people aren't going to follow a formula. They want to know what's the implication, what's the impact, not necessarily the technical details. They want to know the technical details. They can go and search that afterwards or talk to the presenter afterwards.
Unless you have a small, highly specialized audience that is absolutely familiar with all the different details, and you have a lot of time to speak about this one slide with the long formula on it, don't do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And never, ever in a presentation where you're trying to convince a decision maker within a company.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yes. But also at conferences, you show these long formulas on a slide, and the slide is up there for about a minute, if at all. Yeah, no one will absorb that. It just takes space, it distracts, and it's not helpful. So invest in your presentation skills. Many large companies will have some kind of presentation courses that HR offers. There's independent organizations that offer courses in there. You can look into the leadership program that I have. I've also covered a couple of topics around presentation in my book, How to Be an Effective Statistician. So there are lots of things outlined on there. One other thing is, see what really good presenters doing. Yeah, Kaspar Rufibach always says he got better by copying and stealing from those that did really well. Yeah, understand what works and then copy it.
Yes, exactly. I read a book quite recently called How to Be an Artist. And one of the things in there, it said, copying from one person is plagiarism. Copying from many people is research, which I thought that was a great quote. But yeah, Kasper's a great example of a fantastic presenter. And I know one of the things that gets him frustrated is the number of words on a slide.
Oh, yeah.
So again, that's another. And as you mentioned, there's already some recorded podcast episodes on presentation skills. Go back to those. I would also encourage people to step outside of their own realm and do presentations outside, and then also listen to presenters outside of where they are. I read a book by a lady called Jackie Harper, who used to be a BBC newsreader. And she had some fantastic tips on how to be a good presenter, because that is what newsreaders do all the time.
Yep.
They have to keep it as simple as possible. So, yeah. And Toastmasters is another one that I've heard has been very effective for people.
Actually, I have an interview with someone, and I'm now blanking on her name, that joined Toastmasters and through that also lost her fear of public speaking. Because of, yeah, that's a real thing, of course. Yeah, lots of people are really fearful of getting on stage and presenting something. That fear will only go away if you face it and if you go in the direction of what is fearful for you. One step at a time. Yeah, you don't need to make these huge leaps, one step at a time.
Yeah, no, you're right. And don't think that even experienced presenters get a certain amount of nerves before a presentation. I know myself, if I don't get those nerves, there's something going to go wrong, which then incites the nerves. So to me, it's always you've got to have a certain amount of nervousness before you step up there. But it is a skill that people should embrace, because at some point you're going to have to do a presentation.
Yeah. Going back to the case of how can you influence in another organization, yeah? We talked about a couple of different things. One important leadership skill, and I think it's probably the most important and most underrated, is listening. People often go into a meeting just with an agenda to send information instead of to understand and listen. You mentioned the quote by Stephen Covey, to understand first. And that is really about listening. Now, listening is on a spectrum. Yeah, you can have this listening where you basically do something and you also listen to some music or someone talking. Yeah, so that's pretty close listening. Or you can have all your attention on this other person. Listening also doesn't mean that you stay silent. Yeah, you can ask questions. You can respond by nodding, by smiling, by all these other visual cues. Really good listening will create a very good connection. I have the feeling that good listeners become more and more scarce. Yeah. Because people multitask to whatsoever, are not really there, are with their mind somewhere else. It's actually more difficult than you think and also requires training. So next time you have a one-to-one, yeah, maybe with your spouse, yeah, or friend, try to completely focus your attention on the other person. It will make a huge difference.
And as I'm a trained coach, so one of the things that is part of the core competencies of a coach is to listen actively. And that doesn't mean you preparing what the next question is. We have essentially three levels of listening. That level one is where you're in your own head and you're thinking, what's my next question? Level two is where you are fully listening to the person. But level three would be more of a global, I'm not just listening to what the person's saying, I'm listening to how they're saying it. What's the music of the conversation coming out? Oscar Trimboli's written a book called How to Listen, which is a very good book. And he has more ideas and thoughts around listening. The other thing that's very useful is improv. I'm going to mention improv because Richard Zink runs a course for statisticians and ran it this year, I think, at JSM. And what improv teaches you is not to prepare for the next thing. It prepares you to just say or ask or think, but actually be with the other person. And one of the things of improv is to make the other person look good. So you want to be listening to them. So when they say something, you want to be responding not just from your head, but from your heart as well. And you're thinking on your feet, you're being agile.
Yep, yep. You need to stay in the moment.
Yeah, yeah. It's all about staying in the moment, absolutely. And that would be much more effective conversation than if you go with some predetermined agenda and don't follow the conversation.
Yeah. So does that overall answer your question of what you can do with to build more influence?
I think it's gone a long way. And we've just been talking about following the conversation through. That's exactly what we've done here today. There's been no predetermined agenda.
Yeah.
So in the last 5 minutes, Alexander, I think it'd be good to have some actionable things for people to take away.
Okay, a couple of actionable things. The first is, maybe that's not really an action, but maybe something how you can view at things differently. Irrespective of where you are in the organization, you are empowered to lead. You can empower yourself to lead. Yeah, you can be a leader. And that's maybe not an action. That's just a decision for you to take for yourself. I want to be a leader. I will lead. The second is, as I just said, in your next one-to-one or in your next meeting, focus on listening. That will help quite a lot. And step number three, I would say, invest in your presentation skills. Yeah. Step number one is probably the kind of easiest because it's just a mindset. Step number two with listening is probably also rather straightforward because I'm pretty sure your next meeting is not that far away. And it doesn't need to be actually a scheduled meeting. Yeah, it can be something like a coffee chat or something like this. Or, as I said, a discussion with your spouse. And the third is probably a little bit of a bigger thing. Yeah, improving your presentation skills. And there we talk about a couple of different resources. You can scroll back here and look for a couple of episodes about leadership. You can check whether your organization provides any leadership training. You can get feedback on your presentations. Yeah. Next time you do a presentation, ask someone before the presentation to give you feedback thereafter. Look for other presenters. What are they doing good and what could be done differently. Yeah, sometimes you learn a lot from the mistakes of others and just do the opposite when it's clear what the opposite is. So I think these three things would be my main recommendations to go with. The deciding for yourself on being a leader, improve your listening skills, and invest in your leader, in your presentation skills.
Fabulous. Thank you very much, Alexander, for this conversation. As always, I'm sure we could have gone on for hours. I want to draw this episode to a close, and thank you very much for those three tips at the end. And any listeners that want to reach out to myself or Alexander, then please do. Thank you very much, Alexander.
Thanks so much, Alan. I'm pretty sure this wasn't the last one of this type.
Absolutely not.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain and her team at VVS who helped with the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.